Katie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The collective punishment of Palestinian civilians through the unlawful use of force by Israel is a war crime. The deliberate denial of medicine, fuel, food, and water to the residents of Gaza is tantamount to genocide.
As the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza exceeds 22,000, South Africa files a case at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of genocide. We'll speak with international human rights lawyer Francis Boyle.
I believe also South Africa will win an order from the World Court against Israel to cease and desist from committing all acts of genocide against the Palestinians.
Then, as we enter 2024, a pivotal election year, we look at how the powerful lobby group AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, is set to spend more than $100 million against progressive Congress members critical of Israeli human rights violations in Palestine, including the only Palestinian-American member of Congress, Rashida Tlaib.
Speaking up to save lives, Mr. Chair, no matter faith, no matter ethnicity, should not be controversial in this chamber. The cries of the Palestinian and Palestinian and Israeli children sound no different to me. Why, what I don't understand is why the cries of Palestinians sound different to you all.
This comes as polls show a majority of U.S. voters support a ceasefire in Gaza. We'll speak with Ryan Grimm, D.C. Bureau Chief of The Intercept, about his new book, The Squad, AOC and the Hope of a Political Revolution. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll in Gaza from Israel's 12-week bombardment has now topped 22,000. Over 200 Palestinians have been killed in the past 24 hours. In one of the deadliest incidents, an Israeli strike on a home in central Gaza killed 15 people. This comes as the Biden administration has bypassed Congress again to approve selling Israel nearly $150 million in artillery munitions. Over the weekend, the Israeli Defense Forces announced it would withdraw some of its troops in northern Gaza while saying the attack on Gaza will continue throughout the year. On Sunday, on New Year's Eve, one 12-year-old Palestinian in a Rafah refugee camp reflected on the events of the past year.
This year is a nightmare for every child in Gaza, for every man and woman, for every elderly man and woman in Gaza. God willing, in 2024, I wish when I wake up on January 1st to discover that this was all a dream, to wake up at home on January 1st, for the war to end, for our suffering to end, for this tragedy to end. I wish for everything to go back to how it used to be. I wish that we could go back to our homes. I wish this is all a dream. Every day we wake up and pray it is all a dream, rather a nightmare. Unfortunately, it is reality, a bitter reality.
Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have killed at least 5 Palestinians. More than 320 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. 7 Palestinian prisoners have also died in Israeli custody since October 7th, raising new questions about conditions inside Israeli jails. The most recent prisoner death occurred on Monday. South Africa's filed a case at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of committing genocide in Gaza. In its filing, South Africa said Israel's war on Gaza is, quote, genocidal in character, unquote, and that Israel is intending to, quote, destroy Palestinians in Gaza as a part of the broader Palestinian national, racial, and ethnical group, unquote. South Africa accused Israel of violating the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, which Israel has signed on to. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Israel's Supreme Court has dealt Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a setback by striking down a controversial new law that rolled back some of the High Court's power. Netanyahu's broad effort to weaken the judiciary sparked massive protests across Israel last year that deeply divided the country. On Sunday, a former member of Netanyahu's cabinet, Galit Distel Atbayan, issued a rare public apology for her role in creating divisiveness inside Israel before October 7th. She said, quote, I was one of those people that caused the state to be weakened, that harmed people. I created a split. I created a rift, and I created tension. And this tension brought weakness, and this weakness in many ways brought massacre, she said. Protests against Israel's war on Gaza are continuing. Here in New York, a caravan of cars with Palestinian flags blocked traffic headed to John F. Kennedy International Airport Monday. Meanwhile, in Pasadena, California, protesters calling for a ceasefire in Gaza briefly halted the Rose Bowl parade. Tension keeps escalating in the Red Sea. An Iranian warship has reportedly entered the Red Sea after U.S. forces killed 10 Houthi fighters from Yemen and sank three of their ships. The Pentagon claims the Houthis fired at a pair of U.S. Navy helicopters that were responding to a distress call from a container ship targeted by the Houthis. Since November, the Houthis have been carrying out attacks on ships in the Red Sea to show support for Palestinians in Gaza, they say. Russian President Vladimir Putin is vowing to intensify attacks inside Ukraine after a Ukrainian attack on the Russian city of Belgorod killed at least 25 people, including five children, Saturday. More than 100 people were injured in what was one of the deadliest attacks inside Russia since Moscow invaded Ukraine 22 months ago. The attack on Belgorod came a day after a massive Russian strike on Ukraine's largest cities killed at least 41 civilians. Earlier today, Russia fired hypersonic ballistic missiles at Ukraine's two largest cities, Kyiv and Kharkiv. Four people were reportedly killed in Kyiv, another 92 injured. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of firing 170 armed drones and dozens of missiles at Ukraine since Sunday. In Japan, at least 48 people have died after a massive magnitude 7.6 earthquake New Year's Day. Rescue teams are still trying to reach some remote areas. The quake caused widespread damage, toppling buildings and triggering fires. In the coastal town of Suzu, as many as 1,000 homes are believed to have been destroyed. A tsunami warning was issued Monday, but it has been lifted. Earlier today, five people died aboard a Coast Guard plane that collided with a Japan Airlines plane at Tokyo's airport. The collision sparked a major fire, forcing all 379 people on board the commercial flight to evacuate. They had something like 90 seconds. The Coast Guard plane was preparing to take food to areas hit by the earthquake. In South Korea, opposition leader Lee Jae-myung is recovering after being stabbed in the neck while speaking to reporters in the city of Busan. A 66-year-old suspect has been detained. Lee Jae-myung ran for president in 2022 and narrowly lost to the conservative Yoon Suk-yeol. Lee is widely expected to run for president again in 2027. In Bangladesh, a court has sentenced Nobel Peace laureate Muhammad Yunus to 6 months in jail for labor law violations, along with three of his colleagues. Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2016 for his development of a microfinancing system which offers small loans to the poor. Yunus has been a vocal critic of Bangladesh's Prime Minister, Hasina Sheikh. Former Amnesty International head Irene Khan decried Yunus's conviction as a, quote, travesty of justice. Yunus is 83 years old. He's been granted bail during the appeals process. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Felix Tshisekedi has been declared the winner of the country's recent presidential election. But opposition candidates are refusing to accept his victory. The DRC's election commission said Tshisekedi received 73% of the vote, easily defeating his 18 challengers. On Sunday, nine opposition candidates signed a joint declaration rejecting the results and demanding a new vote. In Mexico, the Zapatistas have been holding a four-day celebration to mark the 30th anniversary of the group's 1994 uprising, when they declared war on the Mexican government and took five towns in Chiapas in southern Mexico. The uprising began January 1, 1994, on the same day that NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, took effect. The Zapatista National Liberation Army, or EZLN, warned NAFTA meant death to indigenous peoples. Supporters of the Zapatistas took part in this weekend's celebration and praised the group for standing up to the Mexican government.
To see the organizations upholding their autonomy encourages me. It is an example of dignity. They were the only ones who dared to raise their voices, to say enough is enough, against oblivion, against regression, against death, against discrimination.
In the United States, nearly 10 million low-wage workers received raises January 1st when the minimum wage increased in 22 states. The biggest increase came in Hawaii, where the minimum wage jumped from $12 to $14 an hour. In Washington state, the minimum wage increased to $16.28 an hour, the highest rate of any state. The federal minimum wage remains at $7.25 an hour. That's the same level it's been for 15 years. A slew of other new state laws went into effect January 1st. New laws banning gender-affirming health care treatments for transgender youth have gone into effect in Louisiana and Idaho. But a number of states are pushing back against the wave of anti-trans laws. In Maryland, the Trans Health Equity Act went into effect, ensuring the state's Medicaid program covers gender-affirming health care. In California, a new state law offers new legal protections for people who travel to the state for abortion and gender-affirming care. In other health news, the price of insulin has gone down for millions of Americans. As of January 1st, the out-of-pocket cost of insulin has been capped at $35 a month by three of the nation's largest insulin manufacturers. Here in New York, exonerated Central Park Five member Yusuf Salam has been sworn into a seat in the New York City Council representing Harlem. Salam was one of the five Black and Latino teenagers wrongfully convicted of the 1989 beating and rape of a white woman. At the time, Donald Trump called for their execution. Yusuf Salam spent 7 years in jail before being exonerated when the real perpetrator confessed. The Australian journalist and documentary filmmaker John Pilger has died at the age of 84. He made over 60 documentaries, many deeply critical of U.S. and British foreign policy. Pilger reportedly extensively on Cambodia, Vietnam, East Timor, and the devastating impact of U.S. sanctions on Iraq. Over the past decade, he was a vocal supporter of the imprisoned WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange.
It's the courage of those who speak the truth and speak up for the truth, who dissent, who stand up to the powerful. These are our unsung heroes. Today, as he is led into court, Julian Assange is both our collective conscience and a true Australian hero.
To see our special on Julian Assange, which we broadcast on January 1st, go to democracynow.org. The longtime consumer advocate, Dr. Sidney Wolfe, has died at the age of 86. With Ralph Nader, he helped found the Health Research Group in 1971 as part of the consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen. Dr. Wolfe spent decades fighting the Food and Drug Administration and pharmaceutical industry and is credited with helping to force 28 dangerous medications off the market. In a statement, Ralph Nader said millions of people benefited from Sid Wolfe's work. Dr. Sidney Wolfe last appeared on Democracy Now! In 2017.
50 years ago, for the first time ever, this country decided that health care was a right for two groups of people, the old and the very poor. And we all hoped that shortly after that, something would happen to add more to those two vulnerable groups of people. And the only thing that's happened in 50 years is President Obama's Affordable Care Act, which added about 20 more million people and put in important provisions such as not discriminating against people because of pre-existing illness. So to roll back the clock, not only on the Affordable Care Act, but to start eroding Medicare and Medicaid, now 51 years old, is cruel, is not passionate, and is not consistent with a doctor's ethical duty to first do no harm.
And the Diné Navajo activist and musician Clee Benally has died at the age of 48 in Arizona. Benally was from Black Mesa, spent years organizing against uranium mining on Native land and to protect the sacred San Francisco Peaks in Flagstaff, Arizona. He was also the former lead singer of the indigenous punk band Blackfire. Clee Benally had just published a new book titled No Spiritual Surrender, Indigenous Anarchy in Defense of the Sacred. In the book, he writes, "If history is written by the conquerors, it will be unwritten by those who refuse to be conquered." Clee Benally spoke to Democracy Now! In 2014 when we broadcast the show from Flagstaff, Arizona.
But many of our people don't have running water, they don't have electricity, yet our lands have been exploited. We have three coal-fired power plants that pollute our air. We have these abandoned uranium mines and new mines that are threatening the region. We have hydrologic fracking that's threatening our land as well. But this isn't just an issue for here. Wherever there's an environmental crisis, there's a cultural crisis because we are people of the earth.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, as the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza exceeds 22,000, we look at how South Africa's filed a case at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of genocide.
Dreams are made, the clouds converge, yet you sustain. Are you still waiting for the rain? While distant cities wash it all down the drain. That fields have turned to dust. Let the corporations try to live on the poisons they feed us. Let the politicians follow their laws to non-existence. After all, they're just words without their violence.
Clee Benally performing on Democracy Now! In 2014 when we were on the road in Flagstaff, Arizona. He said the song was for the people in Flint and Detroit, Michigan, who were denied clean water and, quote, for the people all over the world resisting corporate privatization of their water. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan. Happy News Year.
Happy New Year to you, Amy. And a welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
As the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza since the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel now exceeds 22,000, South Africa's filed a case at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of genocide and trying to, quote, destroy Palestinians in Gaza. This comes as the separate International Criminal Court is already investigating alleged war crimes committed by both Israel and Hamas. In its filing to the ICJ, the main judicial body for the United Nations, South Africa says, quote, the acts and omissions by Israel complained of by South Africa are genocidal in character because they're intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial and ethnical group, unquote. South Africa accused Israel of violating the 1948 Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, which Israel has signed on to. Israel responded by calling the charge, quote, without legal merit. The Israeli Foreign Ministry accused South Africa of, quote, collaborating with a terrorist group that calls for Israel's annihilation, unquote. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has compared Israel's treatment of Palestinians in the occupied territories to the racist system of apartheid in his own country, which ended in 1994 after nearly half a century. In November, Ramaphosa responded to Israel's assault on Gaza by recalling South Africa's diplomats from Israel.
The collective punishment of Palestinian civilians through the unlawful use of force by Israel is a war crime. The deliberate denial of medicine, fuel, food, and water to the residents of Gaza is tantamount to genocide.
Meanwhile, in October, South African lawmaker and the grandson of Nelson Mandela and Nkosi Mandela joined a Palestinian solidarity protest in Cape Town.
Palestinians are counting on each and every one of us to stand and be counted like they stood side by side with us in the trenches when we fought to liberate our country.
For more, we're joined by Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law. He previously applied the Genocide Convention for Bosnia and won two requests for provisional protection from the ICJ against Yugoslavia and thinks the same could apply here. His books include The Bosnian People Charge Genocide, as well as Palestine, Palestinians, and International Law, and World Politics, Human Rights, and International Law. Professor Boyle, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's good to have you with us in this new year, but under very serious circumstances. If you can explain why it's South Africa that's bringing this charge, and what exactly is the International Court of Justice, where it fits into the world justice system, and talk about the charge of genocide.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Amy, my best to your listening audience. Not to toot my own horn here, but I was the first lawyer ever to win anything under the Genocide Convention from the International Court of Justice that goes back to 1921. I single-handedly won two world court orders for the Republic of Bosnia-Herzegovina against Yugoslavia to cease and desist from committing all acts of genocide. And based on my careful review of all the documents so far submitted by the Republic of South Africa, I believe South Africa will win an order against Israel to cease and desist from committing all acts of genocide against the Palestinians. And then we will have an official determination by the International Court of Justice itself, the highest legal authority in the United Nations system that genocide is going on. And under Article 1 of the Genocide Convention, all contracting parties, 153 states, will then be obliged, quote, to prevent, unquote, the genocide by Israel against the Palestinians. Second, when the World Court gives this cease and desist order against Israel, the Biden administration will stand condemned under Article 3, Paragraph E of the Genocide Convention that criminalizes complicity in genocide. And clearly, we know that the Biden administration has been aiding and abetting Israeli genocide against the Palestinians here for quite some time. This has also been raised by my friends in the Center for Constitutional Rights and in the National Lawyers Guild in a lawsuit against Biden, Blinken, and Austin. So I believe we will be able to use the World Court order. Right now, my sources tell me the hearing will be January 11, January 12. Based on my experience with the Bosnians, we can expect an order within a week. I would also say, with respect to the Biden administration, they are currently in violation of the Genocide Convention Implementation Act that makes genocide a crime under United States law. And again, once we South Africa wins this order, the Biden administration also will stand in violation of the Genocide Convention Implementation Act. So I believe this is where we will be going between now, I would say, and the end of this month. And it is up to all of us as American citizens to figure out and support what South Africa is doing at the International Court of Justice here.
And Francis Boyle, what's the difference between the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court, which is already considering allegations of war crimes by both Israel as well as the Palestinian militant groups?
Right, Juan. The International Court of Justice was originally established back in 1921, its predecessor, legal predecessor in law. And that is where I filed the genocide case. I was the first lawyer ever to win two orders in one such case since the World Court was founded in 1921, and it was on the basis of the Genocide Convention. The International Criminal Court is a separate international organization set up in 2000. The problem, Juan, is this. Back in 2009, after Operation Cast Lead, I advised Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to accept the jurisdiction of the International Court, of the International Criminal Court for Palestine, which he did. I regret to report that the International Criminal Court has not done one darn thing to help the Palestinians since 2009. The International Criminal Court has all the blood of the Palestinian people on its hands since 2009. And Juan, that is why we set up a campaign to find a state willing to file a lawsuit at the International Court of Justice, the World Court. The ICC basically operates at the behest of its funders and founders and masters, which is the U.S., the NATO states, the European states, et cetera. Until their expedited indictment of President Putin as U.S. NATO lawfare against Russia, the International Criminal Court had not indicted one American, one European, one Brit, one NATO citizen and one Israeli, and one white person. So we've gone, we have a campaign now to support the Republic of South Africa at the International Court of Justice. And we are asking, we're starting this campaign today. I'm part of a coalition. We're starting this campaign today to get members of the Genocide Convention to file declarations of intervention at the World Court in support and solidarity with South Africa against Israel and in support of the Palestinians. That material hopefully will go out today.
Francis, I wanted to ask you, though, Joan